Greetings and welcome to the Pure Report. I'm your host, Rob Ludeman. It is time to bring the orange. And we have not done a Pure Report Unplugged, so this time is going to be a great time because it features Andrew Miller, it features J.D. Wallace, gentlemen, two of my favorite folks to hang out with. We have not done this in a while, so it's really great to have you back as we continue this train moving on towards all of the 15 decisions, but also just a fun time to get together and update everybody on what's going on. Mr. Andrew Miller, I'll hand it over to you as the unplugged master ceremonies.
And we cheated a little bit. This is number 16, but we actually did, JD, you and I found this guy named Rich Barlow wandering around. And then we grabbed a hotel room and talked about reintroduction to Pure, you know, kind of thing. So I'm not sure how that happened, but I appreciate you letting us do that, Rob. It was kind of a fun alternate unplugged episode, I think.
Good time. It's a good time.
That was so much fun. And you know what? Actually, I'm thinking back to recording that episode, probably not unlike today. We were recording in a hotel room in Las Vegas where this giant sphere was watching over everything we did out of the hotel window, much like today. Now, by the time you listen to this episode, we'll be long gone from the events of today. But there's a particular sphere in the sky that everybody's really concerned about today that we're watching over. Yes, we were recording this on the day of the total eclipse, and we were just talking about how it's in everybody's feed, everybody's Slack. We're getting really cool photos from all over. So if we all just disappear at the end of this and we're raptured away, remember us fondly.
I think the word for the day is totality. It's everybody's new vocabulary word for the day that we probably don't ever use like any other day, but like today we probably said it a bunch of times. But onto the agenda. As always, it is a pretty lightweight agenda where we're going to start out with a little bit of what's new from our standpoint, trying to bring things from our world, a little bit of a look behind the curtain maybe sometimes at kind of what we've been up to, make it interesting for you all hopefully. And then second, we'll go into the next of the 15 architectural decisions or principles. We are on number 14 this month, so we're just about at the end, but not quite. That is called fixing it before it breaks, or proactive predictive support. We'll expand that out. And then the tip of the week actually links directly into that. Hopefully you'll get the segue and you'll see it happen in real time. We'll be talking about the planner and workload simulation capabilities in Pure One. How do those tie together? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned. But let's start off with what's new. JD, I feel like you've been talking with a lot of people every day, every minute, every hour. What's new with you?
Oh, I have, man. So my team, first of all, I think we've talked about this on the podcast. I lead the America's principal technologists at Pure, and many of them friends of the pod here. You know, you mentioned Rich Barlow, who, you know, is on this team, was a guest of the podcast. We've had many other guest speakers from the team. Rob, my heart is absolutely warm from all of the kindness that you show the principal technologists and participating and coming on the podcast. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, the team is growing, and so I am hiring. So that is definitely top of mind. That is maybe not what's new because I do a lot of hiring, but it's definitely what's top of mind for me right now. And I had some thoughts that I kind of wanted to share for everybody, you know, as it's so top of mind for me, because one of the things that I really think of, you know, this is a very senior role, the principal technologist, right? It's a very senior individual contributor role. And I think, you know, you might assume some things that I hope you won't assume if you're thinking about you know, applying for a new role in your own life, in your own career, if you're thinking about going out there and doing some interviewing. You know, I think a lot of folks assume that, especially at these senior levels, everybody's going to be doing the same kind of things. Everybody's going to be sending those follow-up emails. Everybody's going to be doing research into the person they're going to talk to and the company they're going to talk to. But I'll tell you right now, what I'm kind of experiencing is it's not always true. And the point I'm trying to make is, the little things can have a vast difference or a vast impact on how you're remembered, how you're seen. You know, those little things that, you know, if you think back to when you were in high school, you were in, was it business development class where they kind of teach you how to interview and do that kind of stuff? Think back to some of those tips they gave you. They're still really relevant today. All of those things hold true. Making an impact is really important. You know, Andrew, you've helped me a ton in interviewing for this role. I mean, would you agree?
Very much. And I feel like, well, even backing up, it feels like this is actually really timely, just because this is, for some of the folks that we know at various companies, it's a rough job market for various folks. People are looking. So like, if you're listening to this and you're looking around or think you might be, but I've thought about when I'm interviewing and I've, interviewed a lot over the years, and I've both interviewed for roles to be hiring, and also done, because I've taken time off between jobs, I've done multiple times where I've had like multiple interview cycles going at the same time. So some of you just get better through practice, for better or worse. What becomes uncomfortable, you hopefully get better at. But I thought a lot about the idea that you want to be unique without being weird. You want to have something that sets you apart. And that can apply actually in an interview process. It can apply when you're working with customers. It can apply in a lot of parts of life. You want something that sets you apart. If you're not careful, you can go too far. You can jump the shark. And it's like,
there's a line.
Awkward. But you want to wander somewhere to that line, knowing it's there and not crossing over it. Kind of thing.
I'll give you a fun example though. So, you know, I won't name names, but I did interview a candidate recently who, you know, did their research, looked me up on LinkedIn. And if you've looked me up on LinkedIn, you know, I like to have a little bit of fun. I've got a couple, you know, I've got Girl Scout dad on there because I, you know, I've got a daughter in Girl Scouts, and I highlight that I like to scuba dive and I'm in a ham radio. And one of the things that I put on there was yacht rock. And I'm a big nerd when it comes to the kind of music I listen to. And I love kind of the throwback. I'm a child of the 80s, right? I love the kind of throwback yacht rock music. And this candidate had latched onto that and actually had a video playing in their background, you know, not so subtly, but maybe kind of subtly, of a bunch of music videos from that time frame. And you know what? It was fun. It gave us, you know, it gave us something to kind of chat about and, you know, break the ice a little bit and get kind of comfortable talking to each other. And, you know, am I going to make a hiring decision based 100% on that? No, absolutely not. I'm going to pick somebody who's, you know, meets all the aspects of the role that we're hiring for. But did that absolutely help that conversation get off to a great start and us have a great connection? Heck yeah, it did. Just from going, doing a little research and having a little fun with it, you know, memorable without being weird. Right.
There's actually someone else, and I'm going to leave his name out. Maybe I'll give a shout out on a later one just because I want to. He actually started a day at Pure. I worked with him in a previous life. I sent him some of the coffee break recordings, and he listened to almost every single one of them. I think every single one of them based on what he said. And that helped him a lot. Even someone who's a pretty tough interviewer here at Pure, fair, but tough. I'm leaving names out so I won't get in trouble, said that he did a really good job. And it's like, you know, so looking for the pieces, doing the research, showing up, trying to be a little bit different.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to mention on this topic, because I think it relates so nicely to, yes, what we do as principal technologists, but what our broader community, the sales engineers, what we really do is we're storytellers, right? Yes, we have a lot of technical knowledge, but we use that knowledge to help you tell a story about how you're going to achieve a business outcome or how you're going to have an experience that's a little bit better. And so my advice to anybody who's getting ready to interview is you can't anticipate every single question, but what you can do is you can have some really great stories in your back pocket that highlight different aspects of your career that you want to highlight, or that your aptitude or your interests, and think about them in those stories. Write them down, practice them, have them in your back pocket. I promise you, if you've got a couple of really great stories, you're going to be able to fit them dynamically into a lot of different questions, a lot of different conversation. It's going to be a really powerful tool for you, not only in interviewing, but in sales engineering too. So that's it. That's my final thought on the subject.
I'm going to tag one more on there. I feel like I'm borrowing part of your what's new, but you know, hey, it's not shared background. The other thing I like to do, and actually you mentioned this, Rob, is make sure to flip around at the end of an interview. For people to ask questions of you, because my assumption is like, hey, just like, and usually I'll kind of joke.
Interviews
about,
are two ways, right?
They should be. They absolutely should be, in the sense of like, I'm being interviewed. Let's be real while we're on this call together, you know, kind of thing. But we're not going to be super formal about it. But you're interviewing Pure or whatever company as much as they're interviewing you, because we all vote with our feet. This is a choice of how we invest our lives, a good chunk of our lives, frankly. And so one of the things I like to do actually is if there's an opportunity to ask questions. But for me, if there is, I'll often ask the same question, maybe a somewhat broad one, to multiple people, and then compare and triangulate the responses that I get back. I'm not trying to trip anyone up, and I'm not going to call it out if there's totally different answers kind of thing. But I am curious to see how aligned people are on certain things around culture, around the overall value of the company, what they find exciting, or is it totally different stuff? And then starting to read between the lines on that.
Yeah, Andrew, that was a recent loop I did where we had, gosh, I think I did 7 or 8 candidates for a role. And I thought the most fair, the most objective way was to create a standard set of questions, right? That didn't eliminate some other conversation that was had during the period of time, but it was really easy at the end. And I guess this is more a tip for the interviewer, not the E, to create a standard question flow if and when you have many candidates. If it's two or three, maybe just kind of take it as it is. But it was really easy when I got to the end to take those seven or eight and go, all right, here's the top three. And of those, how do I then evaluate those three? And it also got really easy then later on when we started having meetings to decide who we were going to select to actually pull those data points up and go, well, here are the responses. And even when we hired someone, people on that team said, hey, wait, you know, what was this person's view on X? And I was like, oh, well, we talked about it during the interview. So good tip there for the interviewer. But I agree with everything you're saying on the interviewee. What is it, JD? You make a decision on someone generally in the first 5 minutes. So, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, that's how we operate. And if you can find something like that video in the background that shows that that person took the time to understand more about you, maybe you get to talk a little bit more past that first impression piece.
I think it's our challenge as interviewers to fight really hard against that impulse, yes. But it's also a responsibility of an interviewee to understand that that's human nature and take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The power of first impressions, used to say from an SE standpoint, sales engineer, systems engineer, we call it, we are in the business of first impressions. And that is not giving, saying that you should draw quick judgments about people, but recognizing that when that's a part of your job and your role, you need to understand those dynamics and work within them. Okay. And I feel like that was almost like a joint what's new.
What's new with you, Andrew?
Yeah, Andrew, come on. Why are you helping so long to get to your part?
I've been helping you with some of the interviews, but not as good as I used to. I thought I'd pick three items here, each of which, if I'm not careful, I could riff for a really long time on. Maybe we'll come back to them. The first one, what's new, is I spent a good bit of time this last year and in previous years, frankly, around enablement, or you could call it internal training, at a company that is growing and changing. There's always so much out there. And frankly, there's always more to learn. That's one of the cool things about the job, you know, kind of thing. But especially this year, as I'm actually rolling up to Mike Richardson here in the Americas, have been tasked with some around overall enablement strategy for SEs. And how do we bake that out, both from, you know, even like learning LMSs, like learning management systems. We actually introduced at our Pure sales kickoff recently for SEs, the idea that we're kind of branding of being an evergreen SE, evergreen / SE, if you know how the Pure branding works and the naming works. The idea that as SEs, we should always just like our products, which are always improving, non-disruptively getting better, we are always improving and learning as well.
Andrew, I want to poke you a little bit here, and maybe this isn't fair because I think, you know, from what you're saying, when you talk about enablement, you're actually talking about classical enablement training. But I've been thinking and talking to a lot of folks lately about kind of the broader definition of enablement, because, you know, there's enablement in terms of, you know, tooling and giving people access to things that they need to do their job. You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit, what's your kind of broader definition of enablement? What do you think of when I use that word?
So there is the specific definition, and sometimes it relates to what people who have enablement in their title in an org chart are responsible for. And they need to have specific responsibilities or someone gets stuff done. But I absolutely agree. It's a larger definition. And this has even been some around some of the internal systems at Pure. And even how do people learn? Like, when are you browsing versus searching for information, for instance, you know, kind of thing. So if you're trying to understand a topic overall, you want to browse and look around. If you're trying to find a specific thing, you're looking for it with specific search terms, or maybe you're doing it the night before and you went through some training or you knew something about it, but you need to go dig in for a meeting that you're going to have the next day and you want to respect the audience and make sure that you're prepared. Sometimes stuff, when it's on demand, when it's actually pushed to you, it may give you a baseline, but it never resonates as much as when you need it the next day, or you frankly sometimes have already gone through a discussion with a customer or learned something once or twice, and now you're ready for that next level, that next iteration of knowledge, because you actually have the mental framework work for it to stick. And then it even goes into some pieces of what is good content. And often, I think sometimes when I hear there's too much or too little enablement, it's usually about having the right kind. And that's really about understanding the audience and what they are ready for and what they need at the time. So this goes into understanding this case from an SE standpoint, trying not to forget what life is like as a customer, as an SE, as a partner, but also recognizing you can only tailor so much while still getting stuff out the door. Did I just describe a huge balancing act? Yes, I did. It's like a really large tasking for Mike. It's not a trivial one. That's why I put it up here. It's like enablement strategy. What did I leave out there? Because I'm betting you had something else in mind.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, and I think a lot about the content. You know, this is internal content, so I don't know how much, you know, some of our customers listening to the podcast would be familiar. But we do this thing, or we used to do it maybe more often, called the PT release perspective, where it's not just about, it wasn't pure training. It wasn't like, hey, here's all the content. There's other resources where you can get the content and the training, but it was kind of what you alluded to a minute ago. What do I need if I'm going into a meeting, you know, 20 minutes before the meeting, so that I can get kind of read up or reminded or some bullet points about refreshing my memory on a few things, so that I'm really prepared to go into this conversation. Not a full in-depth training module, not classical enablement, but it's certainly enabling you to go do your job better and be successful. And so, you know, I think about enablement in that really well-rounded kind of approach.
If you're listening to this as a customer, frankly, when I was a customer, I really didn't have any sense of this. I just assumed that the people who worked for the partner or the vendor, manufacturer, whatever term we like, they came in and they would know the things they were supposed to know. But if I flip it around, it's like, there's a lot of products, even within Pure, it's more than there were several years ago kind of thing. That's part of a larger portfolio. There's a larger platform approach that we're taking to help with some of that. But even there's a lot of depth there. And how are you ready for the right amount of information at the right time? So there's a lot that goes into that, which frankly, I mean, it's fascinating thinking about it from the customer lens that I've been in, from a partner lens I've been in, from an SE lens, all of that. Next item. This one I'll maybe make the most brief, and then I'll go to number three, because I may come back to this. We're doing, again, this year, we're calling EBCs, or executive briefings, on the road. That's where we bring Pure executives and technical experts and business experts to you in your city. We run, you know, 8, 10, 15 of these, give or take. I'm not making promises, but, you know, it's more than a couple, but it's not a crazy amount. And one of the things that we're trying to evolve this year is trying to make sure that we have the right level of discussion, so that it's not a one-way, hey, people show up from Pure and they just present. But at times, frankly, sometimes the audience is looking to learn about Pure. They self-selected into spending a couple hours with us, so we're supposed to bring stuff. But also adapt the structure and the format so that we can make sure to have a discussion about what is most relevant to any individual customer and any individual role from the customer shows up, and not just being like, oh, we're on this track, and how do we even adapt on the fly? Because sometimes different people show up than you planned, or maybe someone has an emergency and they can't be there, and someone else switches into them. So how do you bring the right amount of preparation, the right amount of flexibility, and make sure that it's more of a discussion than it is a one-way thing? There's a lot of interesting pieces in kind of designing that. Appreciate Rob working with you on that. I'm working with other folks like Damon Thomasy and Rob Ludeman. I know JD, a lot of folks on your team, a lot of principal technologists are involved, but some of the structure there. Last one from a what's new, and that's ongoing, is we have a regular launch process. And if I'm not careful, I'll steal too much of Rob's thunder, so I won't do too much of it. But there's this interesting thought here to me of, Anytime you work for a company that is growing and expanding, there's new stuff coming out. Great. That's what you want, right? However, that doesn't mean that any given time putting my customer hat back on, that I'm ready to hear about that all the time. I only have so much mental mind share for the new stuff from any given of my technology partners versus the stuff I've got to do and what my boss wants, et cetera. So we've actually shifted around some of our launch process to have two major launches per year, which to me is actually really, it makes a lot of sense. It respects the sense that even if we have stuff that we want to talk about all the time, there's only so much time that with, you know, I've got to do the day job as a customer that you can spend looking at this. So grouping that together in a way that's comprehensible and makes sense and has themes, and it's not every single month just, you know, beat the drum. But then also that's paired up with what we call an always on launch process. And there's actually a great products update and releases page on the Pure website. I'm hoping, Rob, we can put that in the show notes. It's on a monthly cadence. And I want to be super careful here because it's not the tier one huge new announcement stuff. And so if I say small to medium, it's like, oh, now I'm diminishing some of the stuff on there. Some of the stuff on there, I look at some of those, and for me as a customer, they would have been super impactful. But we're doing it in a regular cadence where you can come and look at it. We've got a good flow of information. And then we've got the big events twice a year. I think that's my segue over to you, Rob, because I'm pretty sure you're going to talk about one of those events and even keep me honest on the launch process.
Yes. Well, we've gone from, and it's been mentioned already, is the sales kickoff time of year, which is sort of our own internal celebration, but also calibrating what we're going to do and why. And then we hit Accelerate, which is really a party for our customers, we and our prospects and our partners. And that's happening in Vegas this year again, Tuesday, June 18th through Friday, the 21st. And I will say June, Andrew.
Can I just say thanks for avoiding my birthday this year?
Well, I'm the 22nd, so it's, you know, it's ending right before the decision is, you know, do you stay over an extra day for the birthday in Vegas, or by then I'll probably be ready to go home. Either way,
our birthdays are basically bookending Accelerate. We're gonna have to throw a party, Rob.
We will do something in the middle of that week, but we'd love to see you out there. And if you don't make it out, there's gonna be a whole bunch of great material coming after via replay. You know, we're gonna have standard keynotes, a little shorter sessions for keynotes. Special guest will be announced soon, so keep coming back to purestorage.com/accelerate. Definitely some announcements.
Is it Taylor Swift? You tell me if it's Taylor Swift, right?
I can neither confirm nor deny. And then the part that I'm working on, which year five of doing this, it's really fun, is architecting the tracks and the sessions. Basically, how do you make 50 something sessions show up at a place over 2.5 days? And what's fun this year is you're seeing a lot of great cross-pollination among different solution areas. We're doing our standard long form technical breakouts. We're bringing back the flash talks, those really short TED talky things last year that really got a lot of energy into the expo.
And so powerful. Love those.
Yeah, those were really fun. 15 to 20 minutes. Just come grab something to drink and a snack and just sit and listen to something really cool. We've got tons of customers that are joining, which is a great hallmark of how customers love us. Our alliance partners will be showing up in numbers. And based on feedback from you out there, more engagement experiences, not just presentations this year to you. Mr. Mike Nelson is with Cody Mottner is going to be running an automation workshop. That's going to be super cool. We'll have an Ask the Experts forum. We'll have a community customer lounge featuring digital experience, customer experience, and Portworx. And then the evening, we're doing Birds of a Feather, kind of an old schooly thing that people still love. We're calling them beer clocks. We're going to wheel some beer into a room with some snacks and just pick a topic and let everybody just informally kind of chat around it. And the best part, gentlemen, is on the schedule, we are doing a live, that is live recording of a Pure Report Unplugged. That'll be Friday morning at 9. So if you are coming to see us in Vegas, please put that on your session builder. If you want to see how the sausage is made, you can see each of us in person and the faces that go with the voices. So really excited to have both of you for that. That'll be a blast.
I'd be really excited if we were big enough that we had hecklers. I mean, I don't know if we're there yet, but if we got at least one heckler, I'd be like, oh, great, we arrived.
I would just like some applause or cheering or some people laughing, something funny we might say. We'll see how that goes. We, you know, let's have an audience show up first, and then we can go from there.
I almost want to do an impromptu poll of who has the best face for radio, and we can get the room to vote on which of the three of us, you know, is
a race to the bottom, my friend. That's a race to the bottom.
Okay, I think, man, there's so much going on. It's fun. These are, and this is part of what keeps us motivated in the room. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that when we're talking about some of these, there's not challenges that we're navigating, but there's so much good stuff going on, and it is growing, and the opportunity to dive in is what keeps us going each day. But over to section number two. I feel like we did a little longer what's new than normal, but so much good stuff.
We had a lot of good stuff. It's been a little while. We had some good content.
We could feel it. Section two is the 15 architectural decisions, and we are now on the 14th of the 15. It'll maybe interesting if we actually maybe even do a recap a little bit at Pure Accelerate for the live session, because we'll see if we're actually have done number 15 by then. But number 14 is titled, there's actually two different titles depending on some of what I look at inside Pure, but they do fit together. The first title is Fixing It Before It Breaks. You'd say that's maybe a little bit more colloquial, a little bit kind of what the core idea is. You could have stuff that breaks. Let's make sure to get ahead of that and fix it beforehand, so maybe you don't even know about it. The other title is Proactive Predictive Support.
Andrew, I kind of think of it like a subtitle, right? It's Proactive Predictive Support, Fixing It Before It Breaks.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the origin of where this starts. So a lot of these, as you may recall, if you're listening in, these were established back in 2009. So every time we do this, we kind of put our mind in the time machine, rewind a little bit, be kind, don't rewind. Maybe we weren't doing that in 2009. I don't know. But either way, 2009, you think about what level of proactive, predictive, ahead of time response did you have from any kind of data center vendor, you know, equipment kind of thing?
SMTP alerts.
SMTP? Maybe if you were being all advanced, you had SNMP traps, you know, going out places. Maybe you had stuff going with syslog. Like, it's the event of some of this stuff. But in general, it was more of something failed. You opened a ticket. You looked at it. Maybe you had automation going out to open the ticket for you immediately. And then, you know, you'd get a drive or whatever else that would show up.
Well, hold on. First, you'd talk to level one support, and they'd ask you to go do the things that you're rolling your eyes. She's like, yes, of course.
Upload
I'm really good
logs.
At my job. And of course, I've already looked at all these things. Yes, I turned it off and on again. And can I please get promoted to level two support? Right? Mm-hmm.
And then even there, you'd probably usually have to do, hey, for me at least, I remember I would have to, if I was going to call in with a support ticket, I would basically reserve half my day from a meeting and planning standpoint, because I need to be that available to navigate my way through, to wait on hold, et cetera. Okay, so we're in the vintage of those days. What if you had a system, and of course this would be Pure back then, that that actually was phoning home telemetry data every 30 seconds, every hour, every 24 hours, not just from the standpoint of, okay, something like, hey, we need to dispatch a new drive. That's relatively standard stuff or maybe a basic kind of scenario, but actually is going and looking at those to fingerprint, keep that in mind, to actually go and fingerprint things that might be off base or could go wrong soon or could go wrong in the future, or even say, we had this thing go wrong over here. Ooh, we have all these systems that actually we now know have this similar behavior, or this, we could even use the word pathology, maybe, kind of thing. We should proactively notify customers about that ahead of time. So this was even when we started. So the value here, now this is 2009, was, you know, we want to have the best support experience in the industry. We want to be able to notice issues before the customers and even proactively open support tickets. It's actually still a very high number of support tickets Pure opens proactively. If there's a bug that we see, we can diagnose it not just for the one array, but actually for all the other arrays. And if customers are making changes, configuration changes that might trigger something, we can actually know that really quickly to be able to help them help themselves, you know, kind of thing. And this goes back to when we started even measuring NPS. We've talked about Net Promoter Score, not just for Pure, but for support, for our support team as well.
No, and again, what we're in the time machine. We're putting ourselves in 2009 Pure Storage, very much a startup at this time, right? Mm-hmm. And think about the costs associated with being a startup. You know, you're trying to get your product out the door. You're trying to grow your customer base. You know, think about why we might invest in the kind of technologies that Andrew just talked about. You know, certainly there is a customer value aspect there, and there's value that we deliver to you, but it's also a tool that enables us to be incredibly more efficient from a supportability perspective. And the more efficient that we can be, that's a gold mine for a startup. Being able to really be efficient in how we meet our customers, how we grow support, you know, it's one of those, hey, why did you, as an early startup, fund a project like this? Well, it was actually because it's kind of self-funding in that it helps us really not only provide a wonderful service for our customers, but also make us way more efficient.
Help me help you, right? Can we do movie kind of stuff on here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is all the one aspect of this, and Andrew, you probably heard it from me before, that I also love is there's a factor of trust that goes on in this, right? Sure. This is where customers have the option to connect the arrays and phone home data.
That is true.
To our engineering teams. And, you know, we get cell phones and a lot of times you download a new app or, you know, Apple says, you know, do you want to share this data? And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm like, nah, it's my business. The reason we have trillions of data points over time is because we have all those customers that realize the benefit to them. And so I always love that aspect of it. And for us, we've been doing this so long, I think sometimes we get not bored with it, but we just assume everybody knows. I still hear about this one out at events when people stop by. I still have people come up and go, oh yeah, you guys were just in the other day. I'm like, oh, what were we doing the other day? They're like, oh, you're just replacing some modules that you said might get flaky in the future so that I don't have any challenges or any outages. I love that, right? It's really cool that we still hear about that.
You know, I think that's something, if I'm recalling correctly, you actually talked about with Rich a little bit on the podcast you did with him. Yeah. You know, I've been here for 4 years. Andrew, what's your tenure now?
Just over five.
Just over 5 years. You know, we tend to your point, Rob, we've lived with this long enough. It's status quo for us. We just expect these things to work. But to hear the passion of somebody come in like Rich, he's like, guys, this is not industry status quo. What we're doing here is remarkably different. And it really kind of helps you level set, like, oh gosh, I've just gotten so used to this that I kind of forget that the world's a little different out there.
And there's a piece of me that, for anyone listening, if you're thinking, ooh, this sounds like an origin story for Pure One, you're absolutely right. But before we go there, I actually want to keep playing this out a little bit, because there's a couple more almost architectural, philosophical things that matter here. So we started to think about having lots and lots of data points. You know, we've got all this logging coming in. So then we get into the scenario, you know, so let's just, you know, say an example. If we go back in the time machine still, you know, you have an FA Flash Array 450. And so it's a specific model. It's using iSCSI, which is a certain level way of connecting, right? And it's hitting, maybe getting close to the maximum number of snapshots that it could have. And so you would want to send an alert out on that. You may want to alert that for that array. You want to alert for other arrays based on how you see the array behaving as it's getting close to various maximums. Now, snapshots is an example. It could be other things. So the key focus here is around selectivity. And this is actually now pulled directly actually from a paper on this stuff. So as we were even thinking, they were even thinking ahead, not we, because I wasn't here then, but you know, Pure. No, I think we can use the royal we, but we've been here long enough, we can get away with it. But as we were planning for the flash array and then FlashBlade and then Cloud Block Store, I mean, the growth of the portfolio, as the install base grew into the tens of thousands, stability and consistency becomes really important at scale, but not at the price of having to blast everyone with tons of alerts. So you need to have a level of granularity as far as how you're actually targeting that proactive alerting, and not just go to alert fatigue if I get all these alerts that are general and I've got to go now as a customer and read all my emails and figure out everything. No. It's our job to figure out what of those things specifically applies to you and remediate it in a way that is time effective for you, that is cost effective for Pure, et cetera. That is what then led into a lot of Pure One. And I'm actually making sure to look back. We've talked a little bit about fingerprints. I'm going back to your fingerprint library. That's a term that we've actually used and maintained about being able to look at challenges over time. And that actually there's even a little bit of, I don't want to say fuzzy logic here, but the idea that it has to be somewhat inexact, in that if you get too precise, you're going to knock out the scenarios that you want to look at. So there is a human and a technology interplay here as far as on the Pure side, but automating as much as we can, and even automating in a way that can accommodate new array models, new capabilities. So that's where it gets into the idea of inexact, used in a scientific term, that it's not so precise that when you introduce a new model, a new capability, suddenly all the approaches that you had to fulfill this philosophy about being predictive and proactive now don't apply anymore. I think I'm about to bridge into Pure One and where it's gone. JD, before I go there, please.
Well, you know, I had one thought as we were talking through this. You know, this is really a lot of what we're doing is driving. We're talking about it from a support perspective, which is very important. All of this, all of these heuristics help us provide a higher level support, but it also helps us build a better product. And one of the things I really want to highlight is we give you those benefits back for free as part of your, you know, software contract. And all you have to do is install them. And if you've listened to this podcast, we've talked about non-disruptive upgrades. We've talked about all of the reasons why you should really have a proactive approach to bringing new software updates into your Pure products. But one of the reasons why is you're getting the benefits of a lot of the product development that we're able to build on top of the intelligence that we are learning from having all of this data. So my big plug for, you know, I try to break out of that 2009 mentality. And I only do software upgrades once a year, and I only do it after I'm at, you know, 0.3 of the, we got to get out of that. This is no longer 2009. It's 2024. We're in a cloud-like world where updates are automatic, seamless. They just happen in the background. We built an architecture that can absolutely support that. And my biggest recommendation is, you know, think about your business practices, change that model, adopt these new updates as quickly as you can and take advantage of some of these benefits.
So we've got the level of proactivity. There's telemetry. Yeah, we could call it a fancy word for log data. Either way, I like saying telemetry. Streaming in. We're doing fingerprinting and correlation. Now, what else can you do with that? And to me, the best practical way to answer that is maybe while you're even listening to us, just go up, pull up Pure One and look at the sidebar. You know, you see the dashboard, you see assessment on various things, whether it's data protection, there's software lifecycle stuff, there's sustainability reporting. You can see appliance view, you can see fleets and appliance view. You can even do a good bit of analytics. There's stuff like VM analytics. We've talked about that here in the past and other times. There's things around tracking protection. Of course, your support cases are in there. Ironically, that's toward the bottom because hopefully that is less of what you're having to do in here than some of the other good value add, right, kind of stuff. But there's a whole wealth of capabilities that have been built on top of that core data, and then pulling the thread of like, where else could we go to help you be proactive?
In some respects, Pure One is actually a victim of its own success. You know, all of this, you know, proactive support that we talk about makes the products that we build very low touch. People don't think about them as often. There's not a need to go into some of these tools. And I've heard countless comments from customers that I had no idea that that was in Pure One. When did you add that feature? Where did that capability come from? And you know, so it's one of those things. My first theme: keep your products up to date best you can. My second theme is every once in a while, put a reminder on your calendar. Just go log into Pure One and see what's new. You're going to find some really cool stuff in there.
Yeah. And again, another one of the, you know, I pull these little nuggets that are more what's the human benefit to things for people that have jobs and are working in IT and looking at it. This is both a time saver and a blame deflector. Right. So I'll go into that real quickly, but like the time saver part is the number of times, again, where customers have come up to me and said something in the IT environment was going wonky. It was 10:30 at night. I got a call. I pulled it up. It wasn't storage, right? I could look into Pure One and know it wasn't storage. And then the other is the blame deflector. That's the one I love hearing about from the IT leaders or the admin folks, where they just go, oh, your storage is bogging down our VMs. Let me go look. Nope. It's going fine. The problem is somewhere else. And let's help you.
I'm going back to bed.
Yeah, I'm going back to bed. We'll help you tomorrow to figure it out if we need to. Like, we'll collaborate on this, but it's the blame deflector thing where it's not storage in most cases when it's our storage, which is really super cool.
A little bit of a side comment. In Pure One, there's a section called virtual machines. We'll sometimes refer to that as VM analytics that actually can also pull in logs from vSphere, from vCenter. And do that in a way to help you correlate multiple levels of the stack for performance. Okay, fine. What I more like is how I often describe it when I'm doing, you know, if I've got 60 seconds to describe it to someone who actually is responsible for what you just described, Rob, is it is VM analytics or the virtual machine section, Pure One, is the fastest path to not my fault. Maybe set in a nicer tone to your coworker, or it's the fastest path to, can you come back a little later? I got to check some stuff here, you know, so you're not getting too ahead of your skis. You're like, ooh, there's something I need to dig in here too. But giving that as quick visibility, and that actually extends both in VMware environments and even further around the stack. Now, so if we said this is about being predictive and proactive, starting with a standpoint of maybe even if we dare say a little bit of a break fix, you know, there are things that will go wrong. We want to get ahead of those in various ways with fingerprinting. I'd say actually the evolution of this, because this theme, this principle has been a gift that keeps on giving, right? You know, we're in 2024, so it's 15 years later. This is almost a little bit of, you know, instead now it's about making things better before you get too close. You can look at trend lines. You can see where things are going. You can see better reporting on how you're using all the different, say, from a ransomware mitigation standpoint, you know, what percentage of the Pure capabilities are you using around that? That's what the data protection assessment is meant to help give you visibility on. Or if it's sustainability, you have ESG or you have power goals, et cetera. You can actually see some of that. So it's giving you tools to be more proactive and aware of your environment. And if I'm really going to play buzzword bingo, this is where I just jump all on top of the observability trend and how we talk about observability with a capital O. It actually feels like it links into that, especially when we wander into an API discussion and into integration with other systems there. JD or Rob, I'm about to move into the tip of the week, but what else do we want to mine here?
I think we've addressed this one pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, I've gotten something chambered for tip of the week. Once you hit that,
oh, he's ready.
Looking up a couple things because this is a part that I really love, and I was at the origin of this.
Maybe I will put one thing out there before we change directions, which is I'll remind everybody that we love feedback. Rob, remind us what our email address is.
Yeah, purereport@purestorage.com. You can hit it there.
Purereport@purestorage.com. If you've got feedback on maybe something that you learned in Pure One that helped you, or if you don't regularly use Pure One and you've got some ideas on how we could maybe incentivize you to take advantage of it a little more often, we'd love to hear it. Purereport@purestorage.com. Give us some feedback. We'll talk about that maybe on the future podcast if we get any of those.
Awesome. So it's not a direction change. It's more almost pausing myself from going into what we wanted to highlight is the tip of the week, but it's a logical extension of what we just talked about. So what we're going to talk about is a feature inside Pure One. So it's meant to be a tip. So we're going to be a little bit tactical so you can kind of feel where it's going. And then we'll talk a little bit, you know, bigger picture too. Sometimes we'll call it planner inside Pure. This can be referred to as workload simulation. If you're looking in Pure One and you're wondering what I'm talking about, under the analytics header, you'll see performance, capacity, planning, reporting. It's really the capacity and planning sections primarily. But again, let's go back to when I was doing storage array layout and planning, and it was a spreadsheet world, right? You know, you'd pull information, you pull it into spreadsheets, you do some extrapolation. This was often actually sometimes before the days of thin provisioning, much less the days of deduplication or compression. And you could kind of make it work, and you knew you weren't going to get it really right when you were making your projections for growth and planning. But as long as you didn't get it too right or too wrong, you were fine. You know, and you knew you weren't going to hit it right on. And you, frankly, often based on where you worked, you might want to understand, is it better to err on the side of being too high or too low? So this is like just good organizational knowledge.
I can remember in the early days of my SE career, having an entire folder of links to all different tools for specific applications. I had a SQL Server performance storage sizing calculator, and I had a VDI storage sizing calculator, and I had all of these different tools that I was trying to use to make the best guess that I could for a customer about how do I appropriately size this thing for you, right? I mean, it was an incredibly challenging problem to overcome.
When we hear about all the volumes of crazy spreadsheets that users have prior to having this sort of capability as well, just all the conjecture and predictions you're having to do generally on imperfect data, both past and future expectations. And so you get something like this that pulls in so much data, it's quite fantastic.
A lot of time they're directionally accurate at best.
Yeah,
right?
Directionally, right? You know, horseshoes, hand grenades.
When I was doing it, I think when you were doing it, Jay, we knew that we would try to be directionally accurate or be upfront either internally when I was doing it as a customer or as a partner SE about, you know, the level of accuracy that I could have. So we'd have this transparent conversation. But then especially when you start to get more advanced technologies from a data reduction standpoint, I already said compression, deduplications, and provisioning, the commonality of data, the ability to actually even have a chance of being directionally accurate as a human dramatically declines. I don't know how much it declines, but it's like, I can't even really do this anymore with a straight face.
And it leads to waste, right? Because what do? We get the best educated guess we possibly can. And then what do? We add a buffer. Well, I'm probably in the ballpark, but in case I'm not, let's go add a little bit as a buffer. And that's wasteful. And it's not very, dare I use the word, cloud-like. We're in a world today where we expect to consume exactly what we need and be very agile in consuming more when we need it. And having to go build those big buffers is just not something that I think the modern data center technologist is really, you know, built their workflow around.
And I had, let's say that I'm the admin, customer admin, I had a buffer. My boss adds a buffer. We sent it over, and we're working with our partner or vendor who wants to make sure, maybe for just the right reason. They're not trying to necessarily maybe even sell more stuff. They just want to be careful and make sure there won't be a problem because, you know, their reputation's on the line. So they add a buffer. So by the time you finish this, you might get three or four layers of buffers added in. And it's like, oh boy. Now, part of the other reason is because if you do hit the maximum, what happens, that could be really bad in a non-evergreen world where you can't easily add data packs, you can't non-disruptively upgrade controllers to higher modules, you don't have things like active workload where you can transparently move workloads around. Okay, so that's a different world in Pure already. It was, you know, different from what I had when I was a customer. But what if you could be better about all that sizing and planning process? That is the long lead into what you can do in Pure One. So for instance, let's just give some what-if scenarios. Let's say that you have a controller that you're on, let's say you're on an X50 and you're seeing the load metric, which is this meta metric, this aggregation of a bunch of things inside the array about, you know, how much performance capacity does it have left? And you think I might want to go to an X70 or an X90, or how much longer do I have before I hit my 100% thresholds? You can log in and see it based on your data in Pure One and actually look at a hardware simulator, both what's the trend, what does it happen if I change it to a new model? Then you could even do things of, well, what if I add an extra workload? Well, that's a performance question. It's a capacity question. I've got, you know, I've got X number of test environments for this SQL Server environment. And the developers, instead of wanting five, they want 10 every day because I did all this great stuff with automated copy of snapshots to create dev environments for them out of prod. Oh, cool. But they want to double that. Well, I really have no idea how much extra space that's going to take. Well, the array can tell me that, as well as it can tell me the general performance increase. So this is stuff that you can't, you start to think about how do you even figure it out as a human? Like, I don't know how to figure that out as a human, except being really off base. Or let's say that you have some new workloads that you've never put on the array before. What if you could have a drop down to say for the average for this kind of workload that you've never run, but a bunch of Pure customers have in aggregate anonymized data, respecting confidentiality, what would that look like? Rob?
What's really fascinating about this is I was involved somewhat early on with the lead engineer who at that time was leading the meta team, right? The machine learning team. And he pulled me in some of the other database. I was doing the database marketing stuff at the time. And he said, look, we have this thing where we want to evaluate customer workloads on the phone home and see what they're running so that we can make prediction, you know, accurate predictions and simulations for them. I went, what do you mean? So we can understand by the traces of what customers are doing, what type of database they're running. I was like, come on, really? He's like, yeah, we just need from you, like, what are the list of major databases out there and identify friendly customers that'll let us understand what they're running. And then we'll go measure this stuff over time. And then we can accurately know, okay, that's a SQL Server thing. That's a, you know, SAP HANA thing. That's an Oracle thing. I was like, really? And so, it expanded. There's so many choices. So that's the fascinating part of like, this isn't just, you know, spitting into the wind and kind of guessing. They're actually able to understand the workloads from measuring over time and then give you this really good predictive modeling.
All of those tools that I talked about early in my career,
that's, you know, right,
bookmarking and going to, I have all, not only do I have all of those built in now, but I have them built in with the increased accuracy of actually being based on loads and loads of data of real world customers using Pure in this kind of environment. And so it's still an estimate, but it's a way more accurate estimate.
It's home.
Based on real, yeah, data.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Maybe if you're duplicating one of your own volumes, it's based on your information.
Your data.
If it's something that you, a workload you haven't run yet, it's based on synthetic. Although I want to say here, I feel like anybody who truly has mastered the art of the pivot table, that will always serve you well, you know, in the future. But because I never got there, but I've worked with people that are like, ooh, wow, you make amazing pivot tables. So don't feel like that's been taken away from you if you got really good at doing that. There is even the scenario following the what ifs a little bit more. Let's say you're looking at an array. And you're thinking about, you know, what are the heavy hitting volumes? Because you may be thinking about moving things around. Because again, with active workload, you can move volumes non-disruptively between physical arrays. But you may not actually free up a lot of space if you do that. Maybe you're thinking about freeing up performance. Maybe you're thinking about freeing up space. So you need something that can actually analyze and say, oh, the data that I'm looking at moving is actually really common with all the other data on the array. So I may free up some performance, but I won't actually free up very much space because I got the benefits of deduplication. So it's actually common with a lot of other stuff. So we'll often talk about this in terms of categorically, in terms of kind of hardware simulation, and in terms of workload simulation. but it really goes toward answering those what if questions. Well, how long do I have? What if I add this? What if I remove this? What if I move it around? Scaling, cloning, migration. Those have been really practically hard things to do in the past. And frankly, we've actually only made them harder at a human level as we've made the arrays more intelligent. So we better make tools to make this possible at a human level. And if you are thinking this is starting to paint the path toward the kind of visibility that you need for fleet-wide management and where we're going with what we're doing with some more advanced fuel tools from Pure, which you're already going to hear a lot more about at Pure Accelerate, you would be absolutely right. These are building blocks that you can get benefit from right now as a customer, as a partner SE, where the customer is, you know, given you permission to see their arrays, as a Pure SE. But it's also the building blocks to what we're thinking of from a fleet management vision in the future.
Yeah, I'll throw in the analogy that I used when we were all chatting before we started recording. It very much reminds me of kind of where we are in the auto industry and autonomous driving. We're building the foundation into vehicles today, all of the sensors we need, the cameras and the technology. We're not, you know, so that we can build towards this autonomous driving future. A lot of what we're doing today is setting the foundation in Pure so that we're already delivering on some of that value today in what I would say level one, level two, but we're looking towards the future and how powerful these sorts of tools are, built on the analytics that we're collecting, built on the AI that we can generate from those analytics and really kind of pushing the envelope of what's possible.
This even links in potentially if you are, whether you're a evergreen forever customer. So, you know, this is a capital purchase model with, you know, periodically refreshed controllers, but, you know, the flash lasts for a long time, or you're an evergreen one customer that is as a service, you purchase capacity against a certain performance tier. Sometimes with evergreen one, I'll even talk about, you know, if you never actually burst above your commit, you're actually overcommitted. Because you should periodically be bursting above and paying the on-demand price kind of thing. And then you move your commit up once you know it's a steady thing. If you know there's planned growth, okay, you can go ahead and move your reserve commit up that has a lower average cost per terabyte. So this even then gives you the pathway, or it's the building blocks, to be efficient in the amount of storage, not only that you consume, but that you're planning for and pricing out and modeling for. And then, of course, there are even hooks in today for, like, you know, hey, I'm modeling that I'm going to need more capacity to be able to easily request a quote for an upgrade. But that could even go into an as a service construct as well, too. So making this stuff more seamless, tracking to your environment in a way that potentially lets you run fuller or closer to what you need and pay for, while not getting so close to running hot that it becomes queasy, or we're back to buffer on buffer scenarios. Because that's not good, frankly, and it may sound a little bit odd to say it, it's not good for you as a customer, but it's actually not good for Pure either. Because then, frankly, a competitor will also come in and say, like, oh, you're so over-provisioned, you should look at this. And so there's a sense of, as Pure, even there's an incentive for us to help you with something that's good for you from even a competitive standpoint. This is called aligned incentives, and it can be a challenge if you don't do it well.
I'll use the buzzword right-sizing.
There you go. It's good to do. I think with that, we may be through yet another, number 16, of Pure Report Unplugged, a little bit of what's new. The 14th of the 15 decisions, we'll come back to the final one, the 15th decision next time, and a nicely integrated, wonderfully segued, if I give myself a pat on the back, tip of the week around planner and workload analysis, hardware simulation, workload simulation. JD or Rob? Any last words? I think I'm talked out. JD.
You know what? I had a final thought. I'm actually, if you'll permit me, I'm going to make a book recommendation. I'm not getting any kickbacks or anything from this. It's just a book I really love. But if anybody knows me, you know that I love puzzles and games and game theory and all that kind of stuff. And since we were talking about interviewing so much at the beginning of the pod, I actually wanted to recommend one of my favorite books on the topic. It's called How Would You Move Mount Fuji by William Poundstone. Subtitle is Microsoft's Cult of the Puzzle, How the World's Smartest Companies Select the Most Creative Thinkers. This book talks a lot about the history of early Silicon Valley interview technique and a lot of those crazy mind-bending puzzles that you've probably heard a little bit about. Maybe you've even been asked a few of these interview questions. I'm not at all advocating that we continue to interview this way. I think it's been, you know, fairly thoroughly debunked as a as an effective interviewing methodology, but it's still fascinating for me as someone who loves puzzles to learn about these, learn about the history, and even get some insights into what interviewers are really looking for as they were asking some of these crazy questions. So there's my book recommendation for the pod, How Would You Move Mount Fuji by William Poundstone. And with that, I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody at Accelerate.
Fantastic, JD. Andrew, thank you for navigating through. JD, thanks for your inputs and that late book recommendation. We'll definitely go check that one out. And once again, a plug, purestorage.com/accelerate. You can register there, find everything you need. I think, gents, we should try to take on in May, perhaps the final of the architectural decisions. And then we'll cover
Accelerate,
but also we're going to have fun at Accelerate and just kind of talk about on Friday what went down there and some of the new things and some of the existing things. And it'll be a good time. So if you're there, come on out, come say hi, come meet us in person. We would love to see you and record in front of you. And with that, I think we're in good shape here. Thanks, guys, for pulling it together as always. And thank you out there for listening. We hope you get a lot out of these and also just the regular programs that we will continue to put out on the Pure Report. Look, very soon as well, I'm going to start cross-posting Andrew's popular coffee break series because it plays like a podcast. And hey, one of the cool things about when you own an umbrella podcast brand, you can put whatever the heck you want into it that you think people might be interested in. So we're going to do that until people tell us not to, or if it doesn't perform. But that's another way that you can catch up on the coffee break if you're not able to sit down and watch the webinar live or even hit a replay in front of a screen. Well, we'll give you the audio option of that. So look for that coming soon. I just need to do the bumper intro and outros and then pop it up. So with that, thank you again for listening to this episode of Unplugged. Plug, tell a friend, tell a colleague, and we will keep the great guests coming on like JD and Andrew. With that, we will wrap for Pure Storage. My unplugged crew, JD Wallace and Andrew Miller. This is Rob Ludeman saying, don't look back. Something might be gaining on you.